driving Dylan hip to my car. I drive around it because work isn't very far. I call my phone and I check my messages, but I don't have any messages. All I know, driving on drugs feels better when they're prescription. All I know, the world looks beautiful, the world looks so damn beautiful. I feel fantastic, and I never felt as good as how I do right now.
Hello, and welcome to Tomefoolery. I'm Cody Melcher.
And I'm Runjit Sowry.
Welcome to the podcast. And I guess welcome to the podcast, Runjit, because this is our first episode, right?
It is.
Yeah. We are two stand-up comedians in the city of Chicago, Illinois. And we decided we wanted to put together a podcast where we discuss weird-ass books, basically. Is that pretty much it?
That's pretty much it.
Did I cover that one?
Each time we're going to have a different guest comedian with us.
Yes. Yeah. And we encourage you all to read the books too before the podcast or during the podcast, I guess. I don't know. We're not really a read along podcast, but you know, do what you got to do. I like it. And we will do our best in the future. We won't be able to do it at the end of this podcast, but we'll do our best in the future to tell you all what book will be read for the next month, so we can do kind of like a book club thing, but a little less stupid.
Yeah,
and not that I'm against book clubs.
Yeah, and if we're ever gonna do any spoilers that we're concerned about, we'll let you know.
Yeah, and I mean, and just as a heads up, spoiler alerts for today, we will be reading, or we have read, but then we'll be discussing The Narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym. I forget the full title. I got to look at it.
Of Nantucket.
Yeah, of Nantucket. I thought there was more. I could have sworn there was like a paragraph of text as the title. I even said that when I went to the bookstore. I was like, yeah, I'm looking for it. Just Arthur Gordon Pym. There's a lot more text around it. And she gave it to me, and it was just of Nantucket.
That's
and the narrative in front of it. To me, that's a lot of words.
Now, this book was published in 1838.
Ooh.
And for our spoiler alerts, we have like a 175-year rule, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel like it's – I don't – the problem isn't even so much age as it is there's nothing interesting to discuss in this book until it gets to spoiler problems. So, you know, it happens. So we will be discussing the book in its entirety, which means the whole book, for those of you that didn't – didn't catch that word.
That's a big word. There were a lot of big words in this book.
I know. I'm trying to walk you all in slowly into the water. I don't want to throw you all completely in. So yeah, there will be big words. Big words will be used. Big words will be read. And so now, without further ado, if I can go ahead and introduce our special guest for this podcast. He was most recently. Nothing else has happened since then. But he has recently been voted the best stand-up comedian in Chicago by the Chicago Reader. He also has a fantastic head of hair and is a gentleman and a scholar. And his name is, do you want to say it, Roger?
Mr. Sherman Edwards.
Hey, everybody.
There you go. I've got my NPR voice on. Sherman's got his excited voice.
I actually remember the first time I ever saw you, Sherman Edwards.
Was it during our interview?
It was at the Second City Training Center, and I was like, oh my God, look at this guy's hair. Your hair was amazing, and it still is.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yes, we should make this a hair podcast.
Well, I also want to say I think both of you have very lovely voices. It's been very pleasant listening to you, like, describe the lay of the land.
Thank you. I'm gonna go into my Terry Gross. So, Sherman, many people talk about things, but you've read a book.
Yes.
How did you find this book? And by find it, I mean, did you enjoy it? where did you find the book?
I found it really enjoyable. I think it started off, for me, I'm a slow reader. And so like in the beginning, I feel like it kind of started a little slow for me. But then it picks up and then it gets really racist. It's awesome.
It does. I think we'll talk about that later, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we said no spoilers. I think we just launched right into it.
Whoops.
I mean, just to clarify, I guess, why we read this book, Runjit, you actually picked it, so why don't you tell us?
Yeah, what's the story of how all this came together?
I did. I'm a big fan of H.P. Lovecraft, and I remember when I read At the Mountains of Madness, which maybe we'll be discussing in a future podcast, maybe we'll be discussing that. When I read that, I did some studying on it, and I found out that it was influenced by this Edgar Allan Poe's only novella, his longest story that he ever wrote. Yeah, which is this, The Narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym of Nantucket. It is 72,000 words, which qualifies it as a novella. And I proposed it for our first book. Sherman and Cody, you both liked the idea. And so we all read it.
Ranjit, tell us more of the qualifications of novellas.
Of novellas, yes. I was very interested as well.
Well, to be a novella, you should have a bachelor's degree, preferably in that field, whatever field, you know, the novella is about.
Oh, really?
Yes, bachelor's degree preferred. Actually, an MBA helps. An MBA helps. But pretty much a novella is, it's basically like a short story that's poorly edited, so it's really, really long.
Yeah, I think that's basically it. Or it's a novel that someone gave up on.
I always thought it was just a lady novel.
Yes, for the fans of the romantic languages out there, yeah, it's a lady novel. It's a short book. It's the waypoint between short story and a novel. Basically, I always thought of it as like a non-committal novel.
It's not a giant book.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, it gets hazy, especially in the modern day, because I feel like a lot of our novels these days are pretty short in general and thought process, and in ideas. Anyway, but that's for another podcast. That's for my own podcast where I just complain about things. It's called the Andy Rooney Hour. too soon? I don't know. Anyway, let's move on to the actual book itself. Ranjit, I believe that you're going to kind of. You're going to kind of hold our hands through this first episode because you've got some good stuff planned.
Yeah, okay. So you have this guy, Arthur Gordon Pym.
Of Nantucket,
that's right. And he has this friend, Augustus. They kind of get drunk and go out on the sea.
Is it Augustus Gloop from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
It's not. Do we know Augustus's last name in this? I think we do.
I think we do. Yeah, because his dad's the captain.
Yeah. I forget it, though.
Yeah, I don't remember offhand.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he dies.
He does die.
He dies, but then years later it tells him things. Because that's featured heavily in the book.
Yeah, there's a few things like that. A few errors in continuity.
Yeah.
But, so they have this terrible kind of episode at sea. And then they get rescued, right? They get rescued pretty immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I also enjoy, like, Augustus, when he starts off, he acts like he's all cool and sober and stuff. And then when he gets out on the boat, he's wasted.
Yeah, well, I read in the scholarly article on Wikipedia that was another big thing of Poe's, was that he liked to discuss alcohol.
Well, he was a big drinker.
Well, yeah, a lot of other things. But he liked the idea of alcohol being this thing that showed, like, you could be placid on the surface, and then suddenly just the effects of alcohol would overtake you, but you would seem like you weren't drunk.
Well, yeah, and there's also speculation that he liked to show the effects of alcohol as kind of representative of dying versus living. Like, you know, you could be kind of dead and then live. I mean, it's well known that he was a morbid person. I once read a quote by
Edgar Allan Poe was morbid.
It's well known.
No.
It's well known, Cody. I once read a quote by him, and it was something like this. It was something like, if you are ever drowning, please try to make note of exactly how it feels. That was a quote. Something like that.
I'm so shocked by that. He seemed like such a happy-go-lucky, cheery person. And surprised.
Edgar Allan Poe.
You know Eddie?
Yeah.
Hey, Eddie.
Eddie Poe.
Yo,
Eddie Poe.
Epo.
Yo,
Epo. That's what I used to call him all the time, Epo, back in the day.
Emo is actually a derivative of Epo.
Exactly. It's a darker form of Epo.
Mm-hmm.
Because Epo was so bright and cheery. Wow. I don't know. Haven't you ever read Annabelle Lee? It's a beautiful poem about love.
I haven't.
Oh, it's good.
Oh, Augustus's last name is Barnard?
Oh.
Sherman doing research on the fly.
Damn.
Oh, yeah.
The Chicago Reader is soon going to name Sherman best researcher on the fly.
I'll do it.
But not the movie The Fly.
No.
Starring Jeff Goldblum.
Well, all I do is watch The Fly over and over again.
He is the most scholarly person in regards to the movie The Fly.
Ask me anything about The Fly.
Either version. Anyway, Ranjit, you were saying.
Well, I think I was pretty much done with that section of the book.
There are more sections of the book. We don't have to just discuss Augustus.
Yeah, it's strange because you're expecting this book to be about a long sea voyage. They go on it, and then they come back within, like, the next page.
Right.
But then they go on another one.
Ah, Sherman, you wanna talk a little bit about this, the main voyage here?
Sure. Well, it was one of those things where, like, it wasn't, the first thing wasn't, like, the best experience for Arthur, but yet he still was like, all right, let's do it, and let's go on this boat. And like you were saying earlier, Augustus, his dad is a captain of a whaling ship, and so he's like, let's go on this boat, but I'm going to sneak you on. And they have, like, this secret area where they, like, hide him and, like, gives him, like, a couple of days' rations of food and stuff. He's like, I want to check on you from time to time when I can.
Yeah, this was the part of the book where I accidentally started reading Moby Dick and then realized later, oh, I'm supposed to be reading the other book about whaling.
Well, this Moby Dick was inspired off of this, apparently.
Was it?
Apparently, Herman Melville was highly influenced by this book.
I didn't know that, and I'm sad because I know a lot about
it. I thought you read the Wikipedia article.
Well, I read the Wikipedia article about this. I didn't realize, I didn't see that part about Moby Dick.
Well, Cody, another one of your favorite authors was heavily influenced by this book. Do you know, can you guess who?
Oh, I have so many. Is it Frank Langella?
No, it's a famous sci-fi author.
Is it H.G. Wells?
Very close. Next guess.
Jules Verne?
You got it. Heavily influenced by this. And in fact, Jules Verne apparently wrote a sequel to this that I haven't read.
Really?
But he wrote a sequel, yeah.
That makes sense, though, because Verne's kind of a hack. But I could see it. There was also a satirical. I couldn't say the word for a second. A satirical version of this done in, like, 2011.
Yeah, now, was that a book or what was it?
It was a book. It was called Pym.
Oh,
yeah. It was based off of the Toni Morrison article about the racism in this book.
When you were talking about there's going to be a satirical version of it, I thought you were like, oh, did the Simpsons do it? That'd be nice and random.
I mean, I guess they have done Edgar Allan Poe in the past.
They have done
Eddie Poe.
They've done some Epo.
So we're on a whaling ship, right? We're not chasing a sperm whale. We're just general whaling.
Yeah, general kind of exploring, going around.
But we also don't really know because we're stuck in a barrel until a dog returns. His dog that he brought on the boat, because that's what you do when you're sneaking onto a boat.
And days have gone by at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And Augustus hasn't shown up.
So this is a note to everyone, okay? If you're going to stow away on a ship and you need to make sure no one knows you're there, definitely bring your dog with you.
Bring your dog.
A dog?
Bring your dog.
Why would they do that?
Because dogs are known
for secrecy.
Secrecy. Being quiet. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, there could be a group of people in the next room,
right,
and they won't know that you and the dog are hiding.
Right.
There.
That's why the CIA uses dogs as operatives, because they're known for their secrecy. It's an ancient canine secret.
I mean, it works perfectly in this book. There are points in this book where Arthur Gordon Pym, AGP, and his dog are, like, hiding literally 3 feet away from other people.
Right.
Who do not know that they're there.
And they're fine.
Right.
And it works.
Right. Which is also why in this book, at some points, the dog is the thing that you connect most to out of everybody.
Also, I always have an issue trying to visualize, like, this secret area that he's in. Like, no one else can get there except Augustus because of a board that he pulls up. Like, how come no... And, like, there's, like, actual stuff there. There's furniture and stuff like that. No one else is checking that stuff out?
Yeah, there's very confusing, long, like, several page long descriptions of this area that he's hiding in.
Right, yeah.
That's very thick. There's a bunch of words that I didn't even know what they meant.
He gets very descriptive.
I think what happened was that Augustus told Arthur that he had a cask of Amontillado stowed under decks. But it would be, there's a lot of niter down there, and so he'd be worried about him. But they went down, and then he just walled him up. And also, spoiler alerts for Cask of Amontillado, for those of you who have not read that. Yeah.
Cody likes to mix in other books along with the book that we all discussed and agreed on.
At least it's Poe. At least I'm sticking with the author.
You're doing a little Poe mashup.
Yeah. All right, so... Finally, the dog shows up, and the dog is covered in blood.
It's named Tiger, by the way.
Yeah.
It's not Tigger?
No, Tiger.
It's Poe. I don't know. Now that I know he's racist.
I thought you were saying Winnie the Pooh. It's Winnie the Pooh.
Winnie the Pooh.
And Tigger, too. So, yeah, no, it's Winnie the Pooh and Tiger, too. So, the dog shows up with blood, And there is a letter attached to the dog, and it is about staying low. I feel like we can kind of jump around on this because we're slogging through quite a lot of the narrative that is unnecessary. Basically, there was a mutiny. Everybody was killed and the people that weren't killed. That was a terrible sentence. Everyone was killed and the people who weren't part of everyone were put on a small boat and sent away. And the only people left are the mutineers, Augustus, because he made friends with, what's his name, Dirk Peters?
Yeah.
What a great, terrible name.
I think we're going to read a description aloud of him later.
Is it about how he is? He moonlights as a private eye with who checks out girls in their gams? Because that's what Dirk Peters sounds like.
Dirk Peters.
Dirk Peters, P.I.
I think this is before, like, he helped save that name, and then that name got completely tarnished after this book.
I feel like Dirk Peters was the name of the guy from Maltese Falcon. Wasn't that Dirk Peters?
I do not remember the name of that guy.
Dirk Peters, I'm here for the Falcon. No? All right.
All right, so these guys are alive now. They're kind of prisoners, right? Augustus and...
Well, sort of. I mean, Augustus made friends, right?
Yeah,
And then Dirk, here's the dig on Dirk. He regrets decisions made during the mutiny and therefore has decided, and people are flipping wildly through pages right now, and so he doesn't want to be one of the mutineers anymore, even though it's already been a past mutiny. And so then they hatch a plan.
I also want to know what made him like regret it so quickly. Like, what happened that made him go, "Oh, this is a bad idea"?
Like 5 minutes after
you
it
seem
happened.
Cool, Augustus. Yeah. Let me tell you the scoop.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I feel like there's a lot of Poe. I mean, I feel like this book explains in several different ways why this is the only novel Poe wrote. And I think that's one of the reasons, is because A, he can't remember when he kills characters, and B, he can't come up with reasons for why people will suddenly have changes in heart. Like, he can only do a linear narrative, and if you try to make him go off of that, then it just gets bad.
I'm fine with him changing heart. It happened before we even met him. Like it's just so quick.
Yeah, it's a lot like the last Batman movie. It's just a lot of random changes.
Yeah, like how it looked like Chicago, and then like recently it looks like New York.
Exactly like that.
Now, in case you are wondering what this Dirk Peters fellow looks like, I'd like to read this now. Sherm, do you have this handy as well?
I do. No, I think I just pulled the cook.
Oh, okay. Well, let me read this.
Yeah.
Here's a description of Dirk Peters.
I feel like you should use some sort of background music, or I don't.
You know you can do that.
I'll just.
It's doing it right now. I think.
Go.
Okay. Dirk Peters was short in stature, not more than 4 feet 8 inches high, but his limbs were of Herculean mold. His hands, especially, were so enormously thick and broad as hardly to retain a human shape. His arms, as well as legs, were bowed, the word bowed is in italics, in the most singular manner, and appeared to possess no flexibility whatsoever. His head was equally deformed, being of immense size, with an indentation on the crown, like that on the head of most Negroes.
And entirely bald. You didn't finish that.
I know. I was kind of ending on...
Oh, no. The bald part's the most important part of that.
Yes, and entirely bald.
And entirely bald.
I'm looking at Sherman's head right now.
Do I have the indentation?
You do, yeah.
What is the indentation?
Just for clarification, for the people in the podcast world who may not know Sherman Edwards.
I'm more like a Dirk Peters.
He's very much like a Dirk Peters in that he is completely the opposite of all of the descriptors of Dirk Peters whatsoever.
Except for the indentation on that.
Yes.
I'm totally lying, by the way.
I want to know what the indentation is.
The opposite of bald, and he is tall.
He has the best fro that you'll ever see.
He does have Herculean arms, though. I'll give him that.
My dad was not an Indian squaw.
I want to just make this point. I know we're supposed to be talking about the indentation, but at what point was 4 foot 8 considered just short?
Is for, what's the height of a legal short person?
Oh, like a midget? Like,
yeah. Thank you. Thank you for saying a legal short person?
As opposed to an illegal one.
A legal short person. The cutoff for handicap, I believe, is 4'8".
Is it? Oh, that's it. That's the line?
Yeah. I dated a guy that was 5'2" once. He was very close.
Okay. I have to change topic for a moment because Cody... I've known Cody for, I don't know, maybe not long, maybe like 6 months. And he seems to know all this stuff that I don't know where he found out. How do you know? Do you have any idea how you know what the legal limit is for a midget?
I think one day I just wanted to go, what's the legal limit? I literally think I just looked it up one day. If it wasn't that, I would imagine it's because I was dating a guy who's 5'2".
I realized that people who are close to that line know that line.
I guess they would.
Oh, no, they do. But the problem is they also – a lot of them have false stats. Some of them, like I knew a guy that was 4'9", he tried to say it was like 4'7", and I was like, no, you're just trying to add another inch on there.
Because I feel like if you call someone like a midget and they're like not legally, like, no, I'm 4'9". The legal limit is 4'7". I ain't no midget. Like they get all upset about it.
So not to get off track, but to get back on track, actually, I just Googled Negro head indentation. And the first thing that came up was Negro Head, New Brunswick, a headland in New Brunswick, Canada, that is a small coastal indentation. So maybe that's it?
I don't know.
Does your head look like New Brunswick?
Depends on, like the weather. If it's, like, wet out.
Plus, I think we would have to shave that awesome off to really get to the bottom of this.
I'm really interested now in what that means, but we'll find out, I guess. We'll talk about it next episode with whoever we have next week or month. We'll just spend the whole time talking about Negro head indentation. They won't understand why.
You know, one thing that struck me about this book is there were just pages and pages of like sailing jargon,
descriptions,
like longitudes and latitudes, just pages and pages.
Wait. You guys weren't fascinated by sailing jargon and nautical passages? Because, I mean, that's – for me, that was the most exciting
I thought it was fascinating, but it also at times, like, just for me, like, I'm a slow reader, so like, I have to go back and read. Like, I don't want to miss things. But then I'm like, do I need to miss this? Can I miss
this?
See,
for me, when I watched the movie Titanic, my biggest complaint was that there was not enough sailing mentions. Like, I wanted to
follow. But they were doing it. Like, if this was a movie, they wouldn't describe all that. That stuff would just be happening.
See, and that's why I don't like, and that's why I don't like modern movie adaptations of sailing novels, because I want to just follow, like, the deckhand and just have him explain all of the tithing and not tithing. That's what you just give money to people. But you know what I mean. That's what I want in my nautical novels and or movies.
Could you see this as a movie? Like so far, I feel like I could see this as a movie.
I think when it gets heavily racist, definitely it could be like the new Friday After Next.
Well, the At the Mountains of Madness movie that they were trying to make, I think they're not going to now. Oh. So maybe they could do this instead. But one thing I wanted to say about all those longitudes and latitudes and all that, when this was originally published, it was published in serial form in a magazine, and it was not, the byline was not Edgar Allan Poe, so it was presented as a manuscript by this guy, Arthur Gordon Pym.
Right, they made it like it was real.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was by Shippy McGee.
Well, I think it was the first two episodes or something. Somehow, like, the first couple of episodes were by someone else. And the point is, it was not made clear that this was a piece of fiction.
Like, the preface is like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Poe got a lot of criticism, apparently, for that. Like, he was trying to... In fact, you guys don't know this.
These days, he'd be a marketing genius.
He would. I brought in...
Yeah, I mean, wasn't that the whole James Gray thing?
Yeah, kind of. I brought in a few reviews.
Ooh.
There were scathing reviews of this book at the time.
I'm looking at the paper right now, and my favorite one is the middle one.
Okay, don't give it away because
I'm not.
Here's what I want you to do if you're up for it. Okay. Can you guys read these with a really stuffy British accent?
Oh, of course.
Let's do it.
Have you ever seen my act? That's all I do.
Okay, good. Well, there's four of them. And why don't you tell us who did it, who said this, and just read the quote in your stuffiest British accent.
You take the first one because I want to do the second one.
Okay. This is from Metropolitan Magazine. When palmed upon the public as true thing, this book cannot appear in any other light than that of a bungling business, an impudent attempt at imposing on credulity of the ignorant.
I don't know if that was British. I don't know.
That was good. That was well played.
You said pompous.
This is by Lewis Gaylord Clark. This book is told in a loose and slipshod style, seldom checkered by any of the more common graces of composition. This work is one of much interest, with all of its defects, not the least of which is that it is too liberally stuffed with horrid circumstances of blood and battle. I went for more of the eats a lot of deli meats, old British man.
This is from Naval and Military Gazette. In this narrative, the incidents are of a most appalling character. The story is very clumsily put, and the discrepancies are so numerous and so palpable that in its perusal, not even the merest child could be cheated into belief of the page of truth being before him.
Not even the child. All right, and then finally, William Evans Burton. This book is an impotent attempt at humbugging the public. That was short and sweet.
It was.
William Evans Burton. He was very much a
That was the first tweet.
And here's the postscript on that one, the William Evans Burton one. This book was so poorly received that it kind of, like, screwed Edgar Allan Poe in his career at the right then.
I bet.
And so he had to look for a job, like, editing or writing. And he got a job at that magazine that said the last quote.
That wrote that?
The impotent
He resorted to going to work for that magazine, who basically kind of helped put his career down.
Which gazette?
Well, I mean, I feel like he's working with the Chuck Palahniuk of the 1830s in that one.
Is that Virginia? Is that because I know he lived in Virginia for a while.
Yeah.
And he talks about Virginia a lot in the book. So I wonder, I feel like that was like around the peak of his big like alcoholism.
And Sherman's from Virginia, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember there was a big thing where they were all talking about Edgar Allan Poe for a while. Like he lived in Richmond briefly, and I think in like Northern Virginia for a little bit. But like that was like he went to UVA briefly. He went to some school briefly and he dropped out.
Oh, that makes sense.
He was in Philadelphia. In 1837 in Philadelphia, William Evans Burton established the Gentleman's Magazine. Of which Edgar Allan Poe was for some time the editor.
That was the first porno magazine, apparently.
Was it? There's even a cover of it if people want to go to Wikipedia from the September 1839.
It is hot.
Where William Woo. Burton was
the
editor.
Was he touching himself?
He's more like choking himself. It's some sort of like self-autofellatio type of a thing.
That is not kosher.
Well, the University of Virginia, Sherm, that's the website, actually, where I found that this book is published. It's in its entirety.
Oh.
That's the one place online I found it published in its entirety. The University of Virginia American Studies Department website.
That makes sense. You can also download it on the Kindle.
On the Kindle, yeah.
For free. Oh, you pronounce it Kindle?
On the Kindle.
I pronounce it the Kindle.
Because it is so kind.
I pronounce it the kindly.
Excuse me, would you kindle hand me that? Thank you.
You're welcome-y.
You're welcome-y.
we were talking about the mutiny in Dirk Peters and head indentations.
Well, and you know what? I figured something out just now, okay, about this podcast.
What?
Listeners, if you want to know actually, like, the book, you're going to have to read
the book, yeah.
We're not going
to... Yeah, you need to have read the book by the time you get with us so we can all laugh about it.
Or just don't care.
Right. Like, if you're going to get tested on this book, let's say you're in a class.
Right.
You're assigned to read this book.
Don't listen to this podcast.
Don't listen to this podcast.
But I'm going to be real. I'm going to be real right now.
Okay.
The Wikipedia article for this book pretty clearly spells out the whole book.
Man, you can
like read on.
I don't know how you can be a kid today and not get straight A's. It's it's crazy. Like,
oh yeah, no.
I wish they had Wikipedia when
no,
I was
I
in
used
high school.
To do like I
that's
like,
better than Cliff Notes.
No, I would have loved this stuff because like when I was younger and in college, even back when I even had this stuff, I relied solely on just bluffing. Like I one time in a history class. Debated a kid in the middle of the class on a book I had never even read and had the professor agree with my interpretation of it against the other kid.
I did a book report on Jurassic Park 3 years in a row.
Was it just the movie or did you not even bother with the movie?
No, I read the book.
You just kept recycling.
This was like maybe sixth or seventh grade. I read the book and just loved it. And then like I just kept doing the book report on it.
Well, Crichton knows what he's doing. Or knew. I keep bringing up new people.
You
know what he's doing.
New. All right, so we're not going to tell you any more about it except for the Dirk Peters. So, moving on. Dirk Peters gets his gun and grabs his gal, and he jumps off of the ship, and he swims towards the Maltese Falcon. Right? That's where we are?
We're even further off track
I don't remember
now.
That.
Oh,
we're
no.
We're really far off
oh,
track.
Oh, no. I was also reading some of those Hammer novels back from the late early
Hammer.
1900s.
We took a left turn at the indentation on Sherman's head.
Yeah.
And
stop.
That just...
Hammer time.
So yeah. let's get to the part that matters.
All right. So the mutiny...
Dirk Peters is feeling bad. Augustus managed to get on the good side. Then they managed to reverse mutiny. So they mutinied the mutiny.
So it turns out, what the cook? Have we talked about the black cook yet?
Oh, that's a huge part about this, yeah.
Allow me. Or do you have these handy shirts?
I do, but you might be able to get to it faster than me.
Someone talk about this.
Okay. I'm gonna read you a couple of things about the cook. First of all, when it first introduces him, it says, seven of the crew, and then parenthesis... among whom was the cook, a Negro. So you know it's a Negro. Then later on that paragraph, here's what it says. The black cook lifted the crewman up in his arms as he would a child and tossed him deliberately into the sea. That's what the one black guy on board did, Sherm.
And, I can't find it. There's something about him looking like a demon.
Oh yeah, and I mean, and that also comes up later. There's a lot of black people look like demons.
Black people are demons.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like he could have done worse than deliberately toss a person like a child into the sea.
That's true.
Okay. By worse, do you mean chopping people in the head with his axe?
No, I mean like he could have invented hip hop music.
That would have been worse.
I'm going to get a lot of angry letters now. Oh, boy.
Starting with me.
No. All right. We got to move on from that one.
But the cook was
why are we letting that sit there?
The cook was the leader. He was the main guy running this mutiny. And also, he's very religious. Or, like, he's very...
spiritual.
He's very... No. Superstitious.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Okay, sea people are like sea people. Sailors are like that.
They thought sea cows were mermaids.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. Sailors are like that, and then especially, I mean, that was especially in the 1830s. That was kind of like African American slave culture. It was very superstitious. I mean, that's where you get the whole like Creole like Louisiana. Like I mean, like the Tabasco fields in Louisiana. We're like some of the last bastions of like that slave superstition culture.
I mean, like you go to like New Orleans and stuff. They still got like all that voodoo
stuff. Right.
Voodoo
stuff. Yeah. I mean, voodoo is essentially just like a modern form of like slave of southern like slave superstition. It's like a mixture of old island Africa continent. Thank you.
Also, yeah, it's like
continent with the Haiti, the Haitian area.
Well, because like their religion was taken away and their like Christianity was forced upon them.
Right. And so they just kind of molded together all these different Haitian like African things with Christianity. And that's the history lesson for today.
And I think that actually is kind of a good segue to much later in the book when they get to this island.
Yes, the island of misfit toys.
Yeah, the island of black misfit toys.
Yeah. So does anybody have the introduction to that island? Because I remember that it was pretty racist.
I need to stall a little while I find it.
Is that
one of the ones you had me mark?
I think so. It is chapter 18.
Yes.
Please turn to your books now.
If you have your book.
If you have your book, please, read along.
Have you done those books where, like those kid books, and then like yeah, you go, beep, so you know they change the page?
Yeah. Yeah, do you have it yet, Sherm, chapter 18?
I was looking at the...
Someone took my book.
Was it the he had on board as usual in such voyages, beads?
Last no, year? It's January 18th. Hey, Cody, do you want to read this? I have the section marked here.
Oh, okay.
I'm in chapter 14.
Professional radio. In the Four Canoes?
Yeah.
In the Four Canoes, which might have been 50 feet long and 5 broad, there were 110 savages in all. They were about the ordinary stature of Europeans, but of a more muscular and brawny frame. Their complexion, a jet black, with thick and long woolly hair. They were clothed in skins of an unknown black animal, shaggy and silky, and made to fit the body with some degree of skill, the hair being inside, except where turned about out about the neck, wrists, and ankles. Their arms consisted principally of clubs and of a dark and apparently very heavy wood. Apparently heavy wood. All right. Some spears, however, were observed among them, headed with flint, and a few slings. The bottoms of the canoes were full of black stones about the size of a large egg. Do you want to keep reading them?
No.
When they had concealed their harangue, for it was clear they intended their jabbering for such. That's the best part of this. What are you talking about? One of them, who seemed to be the chief, stood up in the prow of his canoe and made signs for us to bring our boats alongside of him. Yep.
I think I'm good.
Pointing at the same time to the schooner and repeating the words, Anamumu and Lama Lama. That's the best part. Come on.
Lama Lama.
Lama Lama. Anamumu. Yes. So let's just talk about what? Their astonishment now appeared to be far too deep for words, for they roamed about in silence broken only by low ejaculations. All right.
Well, here's the other thing here is that these savages, as the book calls them, are terrified of anything white.
Because they have no white on their island. Even their teeth are black. There's no white existent on the island whatsoever.
Yeah, and this is near the South Pole, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, so just to clarify, so what happened was that they mutinied against the mutineers, and then they... their ship, they had eaten somebody that Dirk Peters killed because they needed to eat someone. And then they got in a big wreck. Augustus ended up dying in the meantime. And then this other ship picked them up and was doing like a Darwin-type like excursions into like nature and things of that kind. And so then they got into a big kerfuffle, and then that's how they ended up here.
That's right. Now you don't need to read like 100 pages.
Right. I like my breakdown. All right. So mutiny, cannibalism, kerfuffle, island of savages.
Island.
kerfuffle.
Random tangent. I was and plugged for the Kindle app. I'm on the Kindle app right now.
Or the Kindly.
The
app.
Kindly.
The Kindle.
The Kindle. And I just typed in, like, you can do searches. So, like, I was just typing in the word white just to see what pops in.
Oh, God.
And just typing in the word white to see what popped in. It just, because we're talking about black. It's all like demon and blah, blah, blah. If white, it's always like the purest white. Brilliantly white. Purest white. Says it again. Perfectly white. Perfectly white.
Can you type in black now?
Yeah, no, this happens.
Because for those of you who haven't caught on while Sherman's looking up blank, for those of you who haven't caught on to the narrative of the book, this book is racist as hell.
I mean, just for me reading it. Like, I don't know if this conversation would be as racist if I wasn't here.
No, there's a definite theme of black versus white, and I don't mean necessarily black people versus white people, just the idea of black versus the idea of white.
The fastness of the Black Hills. See, I'm looking for things that look negative. I'm trying to spin this negative, but I can't.
Spin doctor.
Frequently, it's like,
And in fact, these natives, these black natives, they appear to be super generous, super kind. They, you know, fill Augustus and not Augustus.
Arthur.
Arthur
Augustus
and Dirk.
Died. I mean, they could fill him with something, but he's dead.
Well, kind of. But years later, he does
tell people things.
He does tell.
It is Poe, though. And I mean, and I feel like that also we can maybe talk. I mean, there's a way to read that where it's not a mistake. And we'll talk about that when we talk about the ending of the book.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I'm glad that we all agree.
But yeah, these guys appear to be really, really good peeps. Right? They appear really helpful.
Yes, they're super helpful. Actually, right. I mean, in the beginning, they are nice.
All black people are nice when you first meet them.
Sherman's giving you guys the subtext.
Oh, man. Yeah, so they're nice when you first meet them. But then how quickly it turns.
Cody's talking about black people in general right now.
Yes, I'm from Texas. But no, I'm talking about these particular island natives. However, if I may throw this out as a lateral, not to say that this book isn't racist against black people, but it also might just be racist against island people in general. Because I don't know if you all are familiar with Captain...
He just doesn't like not white things.
Well, are you familiar with Captain...
He's not brilliantly white. Is horribly not white.
Are you guys familiar with Captain Cook? Not Captain Hook, Captain Cook.
Captain Cook.
Barely.
Yeah, of Treasure Island.
What?
Nope.
That's all I've done so
the grocery store?
No, there's a Captain Cook. There's a cook.
Long John Silver was the cook. Long John Silver was the cook.
Maybe that's what I did.
Anyway, Captain Cook was a captain. His last name was Cook. I think it was James Cook. I don't remember. Anyway, he died because he traveled around to one of the Maori islands. I forget which ones that had a tribe of Maori people on it, obviously. It was Oceanic. And I think it's still a rumor, actually. I don't even know if my history is correct on it. But he was treated well by them, and then he sailed off. But then there were some problems, so they came back. But the problem was that the island people thought that he was the god Lono. And in that culture, Lono leaves, and then another god, who I'm also forgetting the name of, would then come in his stead. And that was kind of like the changing. It's like in Chinese culture with the yin and the yang, the changing of the seasons. And so because Lono came back, they thought that something was wrong. And so then they killed Captain Cook. Because that's what they felt like they had to do with Lono. So, you know, very similar to this story. Mm-hmm. Because in this story, to catch the readers up, in this story, they are doing fine. Everybody's all happy and chisel. And then they get ready to leave. And then when they're going to leave is when shit goes to hell.
Shit goes to hell. And I have to admit, guys, I didn't really understand that part of the book, what happened there.
Yeah.
Did you guys, when the shit went down on Dirk and Arthur Gordon Pym, mm-hmm. I didn't quite understand how this happened.
Yeah, it was a little...
I think it was obscured. Yeah. And I think that's Poe. I think Poe tends to do that sometimes with his action.
I think he writes very cinematically in a way where, like, visually, I bet if we could see it, it would go down cool.
Yeah, it was something to do with, here's what happened basically, right when these guys were about to leave the natives and their ship was now full of, you know, great provisions and stuff that the natives had given them, right when they're about to leave, they kind of go for like one last walk back to the village to say bye or something like that. And along the way, somehow the natives create like an avalanche. Is that what happened?
I think.
It's really unclear to me. That like kills all the men, kills all.
Yeah, everyone dies.
This party, except for Dirk and Arthur, and then the natives go out and kill the few guys who are waiting on the ship to leave.
Wait, did we skip the cannibalism stuff?
I covered it.
We can talk about it again.
Actually. We don't have to.
There's always room for cannibalism.
I think the Richard Parker thing is kind of interesting, though.
Okay, well, yeah, we can cover Richard Parker, but let's hit this right now, and then we'll go back to Richard Parker, and then we'll come back to this, and then we'll go back to an earlier part, and then we can come back. the thing about the, like, yeah, the avalanche, I mean, well, the thing that weirds me out, and I might just be reading too much into it, is why would you go through all of the trouble of, like, putting together provisions if you're just going
to kill
the...
Just to turn back.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, what's his face all over again? It's Dirk all over again. Be like, ah!
Yeah.
But the opposite.
I don't know. Yeah.
Unless they are just, like, it's just the most elaborate prank ever.
Right. They're big old pranksters, man.
It makes it sound like that they're just really bored islanders. This is like the first interesting thing they've been able to do in a while.
Because it's days and days. It's like days and days of these islanders being super
awesome
nice
yeah.
and generous and
yeah.
helping them.
Well, I mean, I can even understand that kind of to a degree because, I mean, that's, I don't know, there could be some sort of logic. But to load their ship up with stuff that you know they're never going to take is weird. Like treating them nicely and then killing them is one thing.
They've never seen white before.
But
guys.
Loading their stuff up and then like and then killing them.
How they've
weird.
Never seen white?
Well, I mean,
like foam on the water is gonna be white.
No, remember the water's different there too.
Oh yeah, it's black
it's
water.
It's got veins.
It's got veins and stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's got right. different colors
right.
in it.
Yeah. God, get your shit together, Sherman.
I need to visually see it. That's why I want to.
Well,
move
how
it.
Did it never snow there?
Yeah, no snow. If they're going towards the South Pole.
There are parts of the South Pole that don't snow.
But weren't they
ever?
Rockhopper penguins live in that area.
Huh. Weren't they trying to say that it's actually warm there or something?
Yeah, it was warm there. The waters were warm and things like that. I mean, look, guys. We're about to get into the part of the book where a giant white woman shows up out of nowhere.
Yes!
You guys are really nitpicking the wrong part of the book if that's your concern, is that they've never seen the color white logically. When the giant specter woman has yet to appear.
So, God's a woman, and Nim's dead.
Did you see Dogma?
God's a woman. Alanis Morissette.
God's a woman.
Sherman, would you like to do the honors of reading the final paragraph of the book?
I'll do it.
Super, super spoiler alert right now.
Oh, jeez.
Because there are levels of spoiler alert.
From,
just the whole last paragraph.
The note?
No.
Wait. No, that's a note.
The March 22nd?
Yeah.
March 22nd. The darkness had materially increased, relieved only by the glare of the water thrown back from the white curtain before us. Many gigantic and pallidly white birds flew continuously now from beyond the veil, and their scream was the internal Tequilili! As they retreated from our vision. Hereupon Nunu stirred in the bottom of the boat, but upon touching him, we found his spirit departed. And now he rushed into the embraces of the cataract, where a chasm threw itself upon to receive us. But there arose in our pathway a shrouded human figure, very far larger in its proportions than any dweller among men, and the hue of the skin of the figure was of the perfect whiteness of the snow. Abrupt ending.
Perfect whiteness of the snow. That's a good place to end. Perfect whiteness of the snow.
That perfect whiteness of the snow. I didn't even talk about that nice white spin.
Yeah, it's a good one. Let's let that sink in while we go back and talk about Richard Parker, and then we will come back and address the perfect whiteness of the snow.
Yeah, okay, so at one point, kind of in the middle of this book, the four of these guys, Dirk Peters, Arthur Gordon Pym, Augustus, and this Richard Parker fellow, they're the only four people left. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Richard Parker was one of the mutineers that they captured him, basically. They're the only person that they didn't kill when they took over, when they
remutinied, because he could help drive the boat.
Yeah. When they remutinied, they kept him around.
That's right. And so it's the four of these guys, and they're getting really desperate. You know, they're about to starve to death. And Richard Parker suggests that one of them needs to die so that you know what's going to happen, so that the others can eat him. So they do this. They draw straws, and Richard Parker loses.
He's like, but this is my idea.
So then guess who does the honors? You guys have a guess, you two?
Arthur?
No.
Wait, it does the honors of what? Being killed?
Killing him.
Oh,
killing
oh.
Richard
Clark.
Oh, yeah, because Arthur prepared the straws. That's what I thought you were going with. Yeah, no, Dirk Peters, of course, yeah, because he's the least white of them.
It's like, as soon as Richard Parker draws the short straw, there's like, no time is wasted. Immediately, Dirk stabs him in the back.
Well, because Arthur passes out, because, of course, he's too lily white.
He's too lily, right.
Deal with
he's too
cannibalism.
Pure. He's too pure white.
He's too pure white like the snow. To deal with cannibalism. So he passes out and then he wakes up and Dirk's already stabbed the guy.
And they just start eating.
Yeah. So here's my question, guys. Let's get serious.
Before we get serious, what? I just wanted to say that is it Peters? No, not Dirk Peters. Richard Parker. He kind of reminds that moment kind of reminds me of like an episode of Lost.
Yeah.
Where, like, there'll be that random dude that you've never seen before.
Yeah.
And he's just talking shit.
You know that he's about
and
to die.
And you're like, oh, he's totally going to die.
He's totally going to die. Like, when it gets real quiet, when you're watching something and people are having too much fun, and you're like, this show does not allow people to have
especially
fun.
Especially when
it.
He's like, hey, I'm a random dude you've never seen before. How about one of us die? Like, it's going to be you. Like, it's going to be you.
You've made no connections with me whatsoever. So here are my two things. My first thing, guys, if you're stranded on a boat, would you eat a guy?
Here's a darker question. If you go to a fancy restaurant and they're serving dude, would you order dude as an appetizer?
No.
That's Sherman's is a more realistic question, actually.
If it's on the menu. Like, if it's on the menu, then just have it.
Well, no, because one is just, would you
one's
do
under,
it?
Like, you well, have to live.
Yeah, one's like you have to do it at a certain point. Like, it's either you die or someone dies and you eat
and
them.
I'm saying you're just rich and eccentric.
Right.
And you're at a restaurant and it's on the menu.
I would, no. I would hopefully do no to either, but definitely to Sherman.
I think I probably would do Sherman's because if I were in that situation, I'd be super rich.
See?
Right?
You'd be super rich.
Super rich, and
it's
I wouldn't care.
It's on the menu. They're preparing it.
I wouldn't care. It's like,
it's being prepared. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like
that person's already dead. Like, you're not going to save their life by not eating them, you know?
This is why we have locks on the doors now, people. This is the culture we've come
hey,
to.
Hey, Cody, we're going to eat you.
Please don't. not on air. Okay, and then second question. Not really a question, just a statement. So when we got to the Richard Parker thing, what I like to do is pretend that he's Peter Parker's great-grandfather, and this is like the ultimate Spider-Man like origin story.
This is like a crazy revenge story.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Just let that sink in for a bit. Because I don't know if you know this. I don't know how good you guys are with Marvel Comics, but Hank Pym is Ant-Man in Marvel Comics.
You think that's related?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Whole Marvel.
Have you guys read the Diary of Anne Frank?
Not as of late.
I have. Please continue.
Anne Frank calls her dad Pym.
Oh.
That is like her pet name for her dad, so I believe...
What was Augustus's last name?
Barnard. Pym.
No, Augustus.
Oh, Augustus Barnard, yeah.
Barnard.
Like the college. Yeah.
No, there aren't any Barnards that I remember in Marvel.
Mm. How about Augustus? Well, we said Augustus Gloop earlier, yeah.
That's not how lineages work.
Is the month of August named after Augustus Gloop?
Yes. Oh, man. All right, so we had something else we wanted to cover about Richard Parker, though. What about Richard Parker?
Yeah, very interesting. I recently read The Life of Pi, which is a famous novel by Jan Martel.
That is being adapted into a film by
Ang Lee.
Ang Lee, yes.
Yeah, that's right. And when I was reading this book, the Arthur Gordon Pym book, I was like, Richard Parker, I think that was the name of the tiger in Life of Pi. So I looked it up, and it was. And then it turns out this is from extensive research done on Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Richard Parker... was the name of the character of the tiger in Life of Pi, who is also like on a shipwrecked and on a lifeboat. And then it turns out there were a couple of other Richard Parkers. So this book, Arthur Gordon Pym, was published in 1838. And then sometime in the 1846, there was a ship called the Francis Spate that sank at sea. And one of the people who drowned there was a guy named Richard Parker. And then in the 1880s, a yacht sank, and the four people who survived killed one of the four and ate him. for real, and his name, too, was Richard Parker.
And that's real?
That's real.
And that happened after?
After, yeah. Because Poe is 1838, and these two happened after.
Do you think that they chose to kill that person
because
they were like, well, in the book, so you were the one that died.
They're like an early Batman guy.
What?
What?
What? I started backtracking on my, I was like, this is too soon. Or maybe it's not. It's August now. I was going to say, maybe it's like, I was going to say it's a copycat of the Batman guy. But from the, because he's doing the story, because you watch Batman, then like the guy, he does the thing with the guns and shoots up the place. But then, because he's kind of falling off Bane, and then some Edgar Allan Poe guy's like, I'm going to go and kill all the Richard Parkers, because I've read the books. Nah, it's fine.
Cody, you should understand that.
I understand. Well, I mean, I understand what he's saying, but really, you're just talking about copycat killers.
Yeah, it's weird, but so it's reversed.
I don't know why you had them specifically mentioned.
Batman.
Well, and
it's fresh in my mind.
And apparently that is actually why Jan Martell named that tiger Richard Parker in The Life of Pi. He said so many Richard Parkers had to mean something. So that's why he named the tiger Richard Parker.
What a pithy quote.
I don't remember whether they don't ever kill the tiger in that book and eat it, I don't think. No, they don't.
Yeah.
That'd be weird.
I didn't read it.
I don't know. What does tiger taste like?
See, would you try tiger?
No. Because I really don't eat anything that's not a farm animal.
Fair enough.
Wait, speaking of tiger, this just occurred to me. Whatever happens to tiger
the dog?
In Arthur Gordon Pym in the book? I don't remember any...
Did he die during the mutiny?
I don't remember it saying anything about what happens to him.
I'm going to see if we can find this.
I wonder if...
The amount of time.
Yeah, because they could have just eaten the dog.
I feel like he just stopped getting mentioned at some point.
Yeah. He probably just got killed during the
mutiny. See, Shakespeare's really good at, like, if he, like, fades out of something, he'll just kill him. And they're like, he's dead. I'm done with that guy. Like...
I will say, though, that as Wikipedia mentions for this book, we're such scholars with our Wikipedia, that Poe has problems with the narrative, but he does do a good job of structure because the midpoint of the book is when they reach the equator.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, like they do. He does a good job with structure, but okay, we're coming to the end of the podcast right now, and we need to discuss the end of this book because that's a weird ending. I mean, Sherman, you just read it. We've been sitting on it, We've been stewing on it with our brain. Powers. What do you all? What there's a thing about what happens. Nobody really knows exactly. There's a lot of theories. What do you think happened at that moment?
You know, it's a really weird ending. This gigantic white creature, purest white, I think it says. Like rises up out of the sea. There's been speculation. I was reading a little about this. I actually did go a little bit deeper than Wikipedia, aside from all our joking.
Overachiever.
About Wikipedia. but there's been some speculation that Poe's book, this book, involves the hollow earth theory, which was...
I did.
Yeah.
That was also on Wikipedia.
It was, but I actually did a little more reading on it. Okay. But, yeah, so there's speculation that they had somehow sailed into the hollow of the earth and were, that was a creature that lived there, that was a civilization that they were about to see. And then do we know why the book stops there? Like, does Pym die or something?
That's what I'm...
I always just lead towards, like, I think he died. And the whole time his narrative has been him post...
Yeah, well, that's a lot of the theories.
Yeah.
One of the theories is that he dies there, like you said. Another theory is that he dies in the retelling at the point that he should have died during the actual event. So, like, he sailed back home, is telling the story,
and then dies
when he...
Like, mid-sentence.
Well, because, like, a creature shows up, and so he lived past that, but, like, he was killed by the powers that be before he could tell other people of the creature.
So he, like, died mid-story.
Yeah, that is another theory.
I kind of like that a little bit better.
I do too. I like
it. It makes it a little quote unquote cooler. And also,
if there's a movie of it, that's how I'd want it to go down. Like he's telling it, and he's falling.
Well, it also sounds a little more Poe-like. That sounds like something Poe would do: is have a character die because like he cannot spread the word of what he saw. Like it's like The Ring.
Yeah, what he saw was like so
the
crazy.
The Ring, yeah. The vision of it will cause. Yeah, you can survive seeing it. Like he, it's like, oh, it's more like Final Destination. He should have died then. He didn't, and then he has to die at a certain point, and it's going to be during the time that he tells the story. And that's kind of cool.
That is kind of cool. Did you guys read the end note? There's kind of a long note at the end of the book.
Kinda.
The most interesting thing in the end note is. Dirk Peters now lives in Illinois. Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
I missed that part.
Yeah, it seriously says.
Oh, my God. It's like the end of a movie when they do, like, the
He's now Barack Obama.
What? Dirk Peters now lives in Illinois?
Oh, man.
It's like the three of us could find him and ask him what happened there.
He happens to be over 100 years old.
So Pim, like, dies while telling, and then he's like, whoa, wait. Dirk's in Illinois.
By the way, guys.
Yeah. Oh, wow. But anyway, going back to Augustus, so that's why I think that he told me years later, but that only works for the...
If he's dead.
That only works if he's dead, if he dies in the book and tells the story posthumously, because then they could ghost talk to each other.
You're introducing ghost talk into it.
Right, that's what I was saying
that's
earlier.
That's also the name of my 80s cover band.
I've always felt like he's always been ghost talking, and like he's been dead the whole time. But I like the way you said it though, like that.
Yeah, it only works if he's been dead the whole time.
Yeah.
But then here's the problem: if he's been dead the whole time, then why does he just end the book? Shouldn't he then go, and that's why I died? Well, not with the voice, but you know what I'm saying.
Maybe he came back to life when he got to that moment.
What?
I'm going deeper into the rabbit hole.
Yeah, you go into that hollow earth. Tell me when you see a
movie. Oh, I typed in Tiger to see where the last mention of Tiger with a capital T got mentioned.
God, thank you, Kindle.
Yes.
And
I feel like we should be sponsored by Kindle.
Thank you kindly.
It's in chapter 9, and it says, like, I had the greatest difficulty in bringing to recollection the various circumstances connected with my situation, and for some time remained firmly convinced that I was still in the hold of the brig near the box, and that the body of Parker was that of Tiger.
So that's it.
That clears it up.
That's the last time Tiger was mentioned.
That clears it up.
Wow. All right. Well, you know, he wasn't a perfect writer, but he was a writer.
And he's wrote the things that we all love. We're still talking about him today. And how long has he been dead?
Yeah, I saw a live staging, like, one-man show of Edgar Allan Poe once. It was brilliant.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. It was by Jeffrey Combs, who was in several movies.
I have some friends in Virginia. They're in a theater company called like the Core Ensemble. They like to do this thing called the Poe Project, and they'll do random like Poe shows.
Oh, that's awesome!
They're pretty cool.
All of the Poe people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're big fans. I will probably send them this link once this comes up.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Hopefully the podcast itself makes sense. Again, this has been the first episode, so it's been an adventure. We're all sailing out on a whaling ship together.
You guys are figuring
things
out.
That's true. We just figured out the name of this like 30 seconds before we started recording.
I'm still not even sure what it is. Does anybody else have anything they want to say before we wrap up?
Yeah, one last thing. Did you guys see Jaws: The Revenge?
No.
I've never seen a Jaws movie.
I care too much about my life.
Wait. You've never seen a Jaws movie
never
ever?
Never seen one Jaws movie.
Okay.
That's a smart decision.
Okay.
I think
we'll have this conversation after the podcast. There are tons of movies that you'd just be horrified that I've never seen.
Oh, trust me. I'm sure, because I have plenty of friends that, like, because I was a film major. I have plenty of friends that I just hate them because they've not experienced enough film in their lives. But we'll discuss this on a different...
I am included in that group.
Oh, we already know that.
We'll save this for a real podcast.
So, the very end of Jaws 4, all right? this Roy Scheider's widow, right, is on this boat. Cody's looking at me like, okay, podcast is over, dude.
But he's
looking at me like, this is totally getting edited out, and I don't care. I'm going to say it anyway. Right?
It's going to be it. Don't worry.
Okay, so Mrs. Scheider, whatever her name is, she's in this boat, and then the shark is, like, coming at her boat. So they're, like, playing chicken, right? And the other guys in the boat are like, no, he's heading right at us. Turn. She's like, no, she's going to play chicken with this shark to like defeat it. And then you don't know what happens the way this is shot. All you see is them heading toward each other. And then the next thing you see is an underwater shot of this exploded shark parts. And as I was watching it, I was like, so what happened? And that totally reminded me of this avalanche scene where I was like, what just happened? I have no idea.
So you heard it here first, folks. The avalanche scene in this book is similar
to Jaws 4.
To Jaws 4.
This is the kind of biting critical analysis that you can come to expect.
And we hope that is why you continue to tune in for months to come. Sherman, did you have anything else about the book that you wanted to say?
In the end, I did enjoy it. There are parts where it's like it gets kind of long and kind of talky. There's some little hole points, but like I would love for someone to try to adapt this into a movie. I feel like there would be some cool aspects of it. And,
I feel like it'd be really hard to get off the ground though, just because of the blatant racism.
Right, but I feel like maybe that could be a great selling point.
Well, I mean, Woodrow Wilson did say at the beginning of Birth of a Nation that it was a movie that every young man in America should watch. So, I mean, you know, mm-hmm. America has a good history of extremely racist movies being promoted on that aspect. I don't know.
What did you think of the book, Cody?
I like Poe, so I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I read a lot of classics. I wouldn't necessarily say it's great, especially even from that era. I mean, really, if you're going to read one whaling novel from the late 1800s, make it Moby Dick, because I'm firmly of the opinion that Moby Dick is the American Bible, and I don't mean religiously. I mean like just it holds in
how everyone's got it.
Well, yeah, it holds in itself the concept of what America is, especially of that era, and so it's a fundamental book I think everybody should read, and so I. Comparing the two, that one is a far superior book while being also incredibly long. Yeah, I mean, it's not bad. I honestly would Wikipedia read the parts all the way up until they get to the Island of Savages, and then I'd read from there if you want to read the book. Because that's like 40 pages. That's 40 pages.
That's actually a good call.
And that's probably the best parts of it. So skip episodes 1, 2, and 3 of Star Wars. Just watch 4, 5, and 6, and just you'll be fine.
I mean, some of the stuff with him being hidden is kind of neat.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's some
but, yeah, you get a lot
parts,
of
but mm-hmm. really, like, in terms of the actual narrative writing, I feel like the best parts are that chapter on.
That's true. There's a ton of just descriptive prose before mm-hmm. that.
Prose before hoes.
Prose before hoes. T-shirt. Book be bonkers.
And I think on
that. And then have that on the back.
I think on that note, that'll be a good place to end. Sherman, actually, you told me once that you were reading this book in my voice. Was that right?
Yeah, when I first started reading, because you told me about it, you're like, we're doing this thing. I was like, yes. And you tell me the book. I started reading it, and I couldn't read it without hearing it in your voice. Because I do look at you as a very eloquently speak, well spoken, and like
thank you. I appreciate
so like,
it.
I totally hear it. In
I just voice. I just remembered that suddenly when I was about to end it. Thanks. I just find that interesting. I always read. I tend to read books in the voice of Morgan Freeman.
Oh, that's fun.
When I read the Federalist Papers, it was in the voice of James Earl Jones. Yeah, Darth Vader reading the Federalist Papers is awesome. I highly recommend it if you can.
I'd rather have Mufasa.
You can
read
your brain. Valid. Mm-hmm. Change that, Mufasa.
I one time saw a book on tape at the library that was read by Michael Jackson.
Oh my
God. Michael Jackson? I got it just because I was like, this is going to be fascinating. And then it was a different Michael Jackson.
Ah,
that's so lame.
You just got Tom Cruise with this.
All right, this has been Tomefoolery. And this is our first episode. We are a monthly podcast, so you will not be receiving another one until the end of August. Ronja, did you anything you wanted to add?
Pros before hoes.
I've been Cody Melcher.
I've been Runjit Sowry.
And again, we'd like to thank our guest, Sherman Edwards.
Yeah,
Sherman.
Guys, thanks for having me so much.
Yeah, no, Sherman, do you have anything you want to plug right before we head out?
There's always But Seriously, Fridays at Comedy Sports.
In Chicago, for those of
Chicago,
you.
Chicago, 100 Proof Comedy runs that.
And that is also a podcast that gets released, so if you don't live in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. It's a weekly live podcast. We'll have a different comedians, and so that's always fun. And then I'll probably be doing something at the Laugh Factory. I don't have dates yet.
Okay, well, cool. Just is there a website you can point people to?
Yeah, you can follow my Tumblr, shermanedwards.tumblr.com. I'm on Twitter at shermanedwards, and I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/shermanlikescheese.
Oh, nice. I am starting up a showcase, a stand-up showcase in Evanston, Illinois, with Peter Burns and Chris Simmons.
Oh, great.
That is every Thursday starting at 8, starting in August. It's called Double Shot Showcase. It's at JJ Java. So check it out. You can find it on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter at @eccentricgent. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/eccentricgent. And you can follow me on Tumblr at eccentricgent.tumblr.com or go to my website, codymulcher.com.
Great. And I'll be performing every Saturday night in August at a theater in Chicago called Stage 773 doing some comedy. So feel free to find me on Facebook, Runjit Sowry. That's RanjitSouri.
Pros before hoes. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
The mayor, they'd lock me in a psycho ward, but I wouldn't care. I'd stroll into the courtroom in my straitjacket and tie. And when they put me on the stand, here's what I'd testify. I'd say I'm crazy, crazy, crazy. I'm crazy, crazy, crazy. I'm crazy, crazy, crazy about you.